things that you say no to in business that'll actually make you the most money.
I see this all the time working with contractors.
I started doing that, and that was a disaster in the first couple of years.
But behind the scenes, things feel all over the place.
My 20s, even my 30s, like I made a lot of dumb decisions.
And what happens is they never really become known for anything.
That was a disaster a couple of times because you're just not doing it enough to be good at it.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
We're hosting a small one-day event in Miami on May 22nd. If you're running a home service company doing a few million a year and feel like you should be further ahead, this is for you. We're breaking down how to scale past 10 million using systems, AI, and marketing that actually turns leads into revenue. I'll be there with Benny Fisher and Nihal Kaiser, both bringing real experience from scaling and building serious companies. Small room, serious operators. Comment Miami and I'll send you the details. I see this all the time working with contractors. Guys are busy. They're running jobs. They're bringing in revenue. But behind the scenes, things feel all over the place. They're in too many areas, offering too many services, chasing anything that looks like a lead. And what happens is they never really become known for anything. In this episode, I sat down with Benny Fisher, and Benny built his roofing company in a completely different way. He didn't try to be everywhere at once. He didn't try to do everything. He focused on being known in one area and built his brand around that. And that changed everything for him. We got onto some really good stuff in this conversation. How he used his branding early on when nobody in home services was even thinking about it. Why relationships still drive more business than most marketing campaigns. What 5 Mile Famous actually looks like in real life. And honestly, where a lot of contractors are getting distracted right now, especially with AI, we also went deeper than I expected. We talked about growth, identity, and what actually happens when you build a business that doesn't depend on you. This is one of those episodes where if you really pay attention, you probably start looking at your business a little differently. Let's get into it. What's up, guys? This is Mauricio Cardinal. I'm the host of the AI and Marketing Show. I have Benny Fisher with me. Welcome to the show, Benny.
Thanks for having me, Mauricio. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Let's get into it. You started your company as a marketer, right? You told me last time, which is pretty rare at the time. What made you take the leap from starting a marketing business to actually a service-based business at a roofing company?
Well, I was working for my uncle. I was selling commercial roofing and in Pittsburgh, and we would get winters in Pittsburgh, and we would get too much work. He wasn't a guy that really wanted to scale his business. He didn't really want to hire a bunch of extra crews, and so I basically had to stop selling roofs in like October, and so I would get bored through the winter. Because I didn't really have much to do. And so I started helping local people in the community with their Facebook pages back in 2013. Kind of was doing that on the side a little bit. And then when I had the opportunity to start my own business in 2015, I just took my little company called Fisher Marketing LLC. And I said, you know what? Instead of opening up another LLC, I'm going to stop helping local businesses with their marketing. I'm actually just going to run a roofing company, but use marketing to power that roofing company. And so Fisher Marketing LLC had a DBA called the Big Fish Roofing Company. And I built that over the last 10 years, exited basically a year ago. Still own a 20% equity stake in that. And right now I just love helping other home service businesses and founders, you know, create a little bit more clarity and freedom for themselves and their lives and their business.
What advantages did you guys have as a marketer starting that roofing business early on? What advantages do you have when you had that mindset?
Well, you know, I took a lot of influence from Gary Vee. He was the only guy that was really online back at the time that was even talking about brand and marketing and things like that. And I've always had a background in sales, so I kind of always had the sales part down. But what I learned from Gary was brand is really important, and more important than brand is being able to create attention, right? We're in an attention economy. I still believe we're in an attention economy, even, you know, 12 years later. And so starting the company with brand in mind, right? And so I wanted to start with a bang, right? So we came up with a really cool name. I think that's part of the first part, you know, when you have something is I wanted to be different than everybody else. So most of the contractors, you know, have their last name and, you know, whatever they do. So like, you know, in my case, it'd be Fisher Roofing or Fisher HVAC or Fisher Plumbing, right? It's kind of, I don't know, it's vanilla, let's say. And then they would put a logo, would be like three triangles for a roof, right? Or maybe a faucet if you're a plumber, right? you know, they use a clip art from like 1992 Microsoft Windows. And that's back 10 or 12 years ago, that was 95, maybe dare I say 99% of home service companies. And so my last name's Fisher. I'm not a small guy. So a lot of people used to call my dad Big Fish. So I'm like, you know what? Let's call it Big Fish Roofing. We'll create a yellow cartoon character. And at least we'll be memorable. We're not going to be the biggest because obviously I was just starting out. I said that we can be the most memorable. And eventually, once I build great customer service, sell a bunch of roofs, we will be known, Big Fish will be known for roofing in Pittsburgh. Because a lot of people made fun of me for my name because my, you know, even people I asked about this name, they're like, oh, that doesn't even make any sense. Big Fish and Roofing. What's that got to do with it?
Yeah.
I said, well, that's not the point. I said, the point is once we do a really good job, people are going to be able to remember it. Right. And so, and that's what I did, customer by customer, one interaction at a time. You know, I moved to Pittsburgh in 2010. So I didn't have a background there. I didn't have family. I didn't have a bunch of friends there. It's not like I grew up there. And so I had to build it from scratch, you know, one customer at a time, and then being able to use my marketing skills and take some of my money that I was making from selling jobs and reinvest in my brand, getting my brand out there, doing community events and home shows. And you know, I didn't even really do a lot of digital stuff. You know, everybody, you know, thinks I did a lot of digital marketing, but I hardly did any digital marketing. I was on Facebook, but I wasn't necessarily running ads. Like I wasn't really big into Google ads. I wasn't doing anything in SEO. Literally just doing old fashioned brand awareness, truck wraps, yard signs, community events. And then I would use Facebook organic to tell a story, right? And be in the Facebook group pages and get repeat customers and build it kind of the old fashioned way, but in a more new digitized world, right? An online world. So that's kind of what I did. I still recommend that to contractors today.
Yeah, yeah. And did you do any research into and in the Pittsburgh area and to see if anybody had your name before? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. So you know when you go to file a DBA, you got to do that at least in the state of Pennsylvania, right? You know you can't have the same DBA, exact same DBA. So that was pretty easy. No one had Big Fish Roofing. Now I did find that there was a Big Fish Roofing in Jacksonville, Florida. And there was a Big Fish Roofing in Wisconsin. But when I started my business, believe it or not, I never wanted to go any further than, you know, Pittsburgh anyway. I was early just starting my business just to make enough money to feed my family. Like I didn't really have these big dreams when I first started my business. I was basically doing it more to survive. And so, you know, I didn't think about having some unique name nationally because it's really hard to find a unique name in today's economy nationally. But yeah, definitely want to have a unique name in your own, you know, own area for sure.
A quick thing before we get back to it. I'm hosting a small private workshop in Miami Beach on May 22nd, 30 contractors max. We're covering how to turn the leads you're already generating to actual revenue using systems and AI, the whole conversion side of your business that most people ignore. It's at the Palms Hotel, $297 to attend, and we review every application. If you're doing $2 million or more and you feel like you should be further ahead, this room is for you. Go to contractormarketingpros.net/event. Seats are going fast.
That's, you know, I don't say nobody, but there was very few companies that had, you know, an animal or like a cartoon character associated with their brand. And so it was kind of easy. But I've seen some copycats out there, which I always think is fun. Because I think when people are copying you, it's kind of flattering actually. But they can copy your marketing, but they can't copy your relationships.
That's very common. You see in the home services, a lot of cartoon characters. I think you did that almost 10 years, over 10 years ago. So, which is unique. Cause I think I've seen a lot more in the last 5 years, especially.
Yeah. Well, I have the receipts, you know, I actually have a thing saved on my phone, when I registered the DBA, and then I even have the LLC for Fisher Marketing from 2013. My DBA was filed in 2015. The logo was created in 2015. Cost me, I hired some local graphic designer. I paid her $600. And we made it. And I actually like went through, I have all the old versions of what she created. And I said, I didn't like that. I didn't like that. So I really made it kind of, I just used her to kind of actually execute on the computer because I didn't really know how to design stuff, but I put a lot of thought and a lot of intention behind it, and it's cool. It still lives on today. We've updated the logo a little bit, and so there's version 2 now. It's a little bit more 3-dimensional, little bit more life in it. But you know, that you'll have that with brands over time. They'll update their logo, tweak it a little bit just to kind of freshen it up.
Yeah. What does 5 mile famous actually mean in practice for a contractor?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, less about the actual 5 miles. And I got this term from my friend Joseph Hughes at Contractor Dynamics. He says this a lot. I think he even borrowed it from somebody else that he heard it from in a marketing seminar somewhere. But it really just means, you know, there's riches in the niches, right? And if you focus on your small area, right? We all live in different types of communities. You know, you're in Miami, right? Big community, right? If you just draw a circle around 5 miles anywhere, you know, you're going to have, you know, thousands and thousands of homes, you know, inside that 5 mile area. The same thing in Pittsburgh, right? But you're going to see a lot of contractors, you know, and I see this, you know, if you start a roofing company in Miami, somebody in West Palm Beach calls you because you're hungry and because you think you need money, you might say, oh, okay. And you'll drive 2 hours up to Palm Beach and you sell them a roof. And oh, the next time, you know, oh, they have a friend over in Jupiter. And now you're going to Jupiter. You just start to get spread out, right? And you can never really gain the traction and the momentum, right? Because it's the things that you say no to in business that'll actually make you the most money. But most contractors, when they're first starting out, it is a little bit of a dilemma. You're kind of going all over, and I did the same thing. I was all over the greater part of Pittsburgh. But once I realized, like, hey, there's a lot of power in just focusing my marketing efforts and where I'm going to spend my money, spend my attention. You know, I was in a little suburb called Bethel Park, you know, it was about 20 minutes right outside of the Pittsburgh limits. And I said, hey, if we're going to invest in community, we're going to invest in, you know, billboards and signage and things like that. Let's just put it all into like one focused area. So we're not just spraying and praying, right? We're not taking a shotgun approach. We're taking a rifle approach, because when that happens, you're going to get more referrals faster because more people in that community talk to each other, right? They're going to see the houses going up. Your trucks are going to be swarming like bees in a more condensed area. So then it makes people think you're everywhere. And so you can kind of develop that that omnipresence, you know, that everybody kind of wants. And then as you do that, then, you know, as you start to master that, then you just keep branching out and branching out and branching out. And then if you want to go start another location, you know, 2 hours away, like in your case, West Palm Beach. Oh, we'll just put a location there. We'll worry about West Palm Beach now. We're going to have 2 5-mile, you know, maybe we'll call them 10 mile radiuses, you know, that we want to focus on. So I think a lot of contractors, they don't know how to focus. You know, sometimes it's focus on area. Sometimes it's also focus on trades and like, oh, hey, do you also do decks or do you do plumbing or do you do this? It's like, you know, a lot of contractors will say yes to everything when they first are getting started because, again, they need money. But if they focused on a niche, it would actually help them make better decisions, be more efficient with their money, be more efficient with their spend. I think get better results, but it's a long-term play.
What did you focus on in the beginning?
Roofing.
Just 100% asphalt, roofing.
But not just roofing. So asphalt shingle roofing, right? So, you know, in the suburbs, like I wouldn't even go into the city because like, I didn't want to deal with the permitting in the city. I didn't want to deal with the houses in the city were harder because in Pittsburgh, they're like 3 stories high. Sometimes they're really steep. They're small. They're like a pain in the ass. I wanted to work with affluent homeowners that had, you know, pretty easy roofs to do, shingles only. We said no to everything else, no to flat roofs, no to metal roofs, no to tile roofs, no to everything else, because I wasn't that good at that stuff. You know, I was barely good enough at being a good, you know, shingle roofer. So, I just knew that, that was my bread and butter. I could do it over and over and over again. And that was, you know, that was pretty lucky. But then I started to branch out, you know, so, oh, can you do siding? Oh, that sounds nice. Oh, you know, I started doing that. And that was a disaster in the first couple of years. We eventually started do siding once I had more people on my team that could focus on it. And then I started to work. We tried windows for a little while. And that was a disaster a couple of times, because you're just not doing it enough to be good at it. And then when you have a problem, it just throws everything off. And it's like, when you look at it, it's like, man, I could have just sold 2 more roofs. And the amount of time that I was dealing with all those window problems, you know, at least for me. Now there's window guys that would be like, yeah, same thing about roofs. Like, oh, they don't really sell a lot of roofs. And if they had a problem with the roof, it takes them a lot longer to solve a problem because they're just not good at it. So it just slows everything down. And so, you know, whatever business you're in, whatever, you know, if it's home service, even if it's in marketing, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you know, the more niche you are in marketing, whether it's with your type of customer that you deal with, or whether it's with the services that you offer, I think the better your business can be because you can become a pro.
I think that's where some challenges you might have had with agencies, basically, because you're very niche. To give you context, right, Asphalt Shingle is like 75% of the market. So it's still the majority of the market. But still, there's still 25%, like if you're doing metal roofing or flat roofing, that doesn't really fit to what you're actually looking for. But if you're just looking for that demographic, specific demographic, then it might be a little bit harder on the online side. But it's good to wait the way to brand the brand that actual business. If you actually attract that and work in that 5 mile radius, it's a great way to attract those homeowners that they're looking for. All right. You talked about this last time, how important it is to build relationships and branding instead of actually relying on SEO. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So, you know, relationships, when they're done well, are the gift that keeps on giving. You know, people buy off of who they know, like, and trust, right? And so, and people also refer people based on those same principles. And so, you know, if you can do I think your most important form of marketing is the job, you know, at home services, it's the job site, it's the product that you're building and delivering, is that's the marketing machine. Because if you think about it, when we're doing work at someone's house, especially on the exterior, right, you can actually see it happening. Like, the neighbors can all see it happening. People are driving down the road, seeing it happen. The homeowner actually can see it happen. And so you have a lot of eyeballs, right? There's a lot of attention, right? And so, you know, getting that right and then making sure that the neighbors, you know, understand what's going on, right? By, you know, one awesome thing that we always did was, you know, I called it the baker's dozen, where on the three houses to the right, the three houses to the left, and seven across the street, you know, knock on the door, you know, say, hey, you know, we're doing Mrs. Jones's roof across the street. Just wanted to give you my card in case a wrapper flew over into your yard, or if there's a problem with something, I just want to make sure I can take care of that for you. We really want to protect the neighborhood as much as we want to do Mrs. Jones's house. Just want to let you know who I was, right? That's it. Don't try to sell them something. A lot of guys want to try to do their roof inspections and stuff like that. I just want to let them know who I am and what I'm doing over at Mrs. Jones's house, because that's enough. I'm going to let the show speak for itself, right? Now, if they've ever thought about a roof, or if they thought they needed a roof, guess what they always do? Usually later that day or that next day, hey, you mind checking our roof out, right? Or what you can do is, after you're done with Mrs. Jones's house, you can say, hey, I have my drone up in the air, and I noticed there was a couple shingles missing on your back roof. And you can show them the picture. You can go back, knock on their door. Hey, remember me? Oh, we just got finished up over Mrs. Jones. I was taking some after pictures, and I noticed there was a couple shingles going up. Do you want me to go up and take a look at that for you? Or, like, I just wanted you to be aware. Is there anything you want me to, you know, things like that, right? And then community events, right? Getting involved in the community, creating those relationships with centers of influences, okay? So centers of influences are like people in the community that everybody knows, right? So your top real estate agents, you know, your top insurance people, your politicians in the area, you know, your local mayors or your school board people, anybody that has influence, right, that, like, knows a lot of people, right? And so, you know, you want to find those people in the area that are like that, and you want to get in front of them. You want to create attention for them. You want to be able to show up to their events. You want to be able to support the things that they're doing. You want to introduce yourself, because eventually, over time, if you have a consistency with how you look at relationships, eventually, when those people run into people, they're not going to be able to forget about you, right? And they're going to be able to refer you, right? And that's, you know, that's a gift that keeps on giving. Now, when those people go online and do research, which everyone does nowadays, and they have been for the last 10 or 15 years, it really is important to make sure you show up. People can find you easily, right? That's where the SEO, the digital, the Google ads, all that stuff really plays a part. Make sure your social media pages are looking good. But I think we've gotten a society today with, especially the younger generation, where they don't even know any other, because they don't know how to talk to humans. They don't know how to create relationships. They only really know how to hide behind a computer and maybe, you know, get everything working perfectly. But it's the combination of the two, really, that is exponential, you know, and that's how you're going to also then reduce, you know, I know this is a marketing show, kind of, it's more of like, how do you create more efficiency with your ad spend and your marketing budget, right? Well, the relationship thing is, it's just time and effort. You know, it's not necessarily dollars. Now, you can put dollars to that time and effort, but when we're talking about ad dollars in a company, it's like, if I put $100,000 in company A and $100,000 in company B, And company B is much better with relationships and community and everything else that I've been talking about. Well, guess what? That 100,000 is going to go way further, right? They're going to get way better results than company A. So, and that's one of the things I really love about focusing on is, you know, that's one thing I like about Google Ads is like, you know, you're going to see three names, right? And spot one, two, and three, right? Company A, company B, company C. Well, if they've never seen company A or company B before, and company C they see all the time in their neighborhoods, they're automatically going to click on company C. They don't even know why they're clicking. They're clicking because it's just a little bit more familiar. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And like that has nothing to do with how well the ad performed on Google or how smart you are with making like the titles or the captions or anything like that. It has to do with brand recognition, right? And so not enough people are talking about that today. And I believe that with AI and all the tech and all the stuff, it's going to be even more important to be able to separate yourself and differentiate yourself in the marketplace.
I'm curious, did you ever build like a database of strategic partners that you had, like you said, realtors, property managers? Did you?
Yeah. We had a list. And then what I would do is that we got bigger after, you know, I was trying to reteach this to my salespeople. You know, I was even trying, when I hired a marketing manager, I was trying to teach this to her. We started to grow. I made everybody join a, because not everybody is good at networking as me. That's a gift that I have. I'm going to admit that, you know, there's some things that some people are better at. You know, I'm really good at just creating connection really fast. I love networking. I love hanging out with people. I care about people. And so when you're listening to this podcast, you might think, well, I'm not like Benny. I can't do that. And I'm just going to go back and hide behind the computer. That's fine. But try to find somebody on your team, though, that is, or try to hire people that can build those authentic relationships. But then once you have your list, you know, I call it your top 50 list, you know, then you want to have touch points, right? And so, you know, you're not talking to these people every day. You know, you might want to put them on a list where like you call them at least once or twice a month and just check in with them. Or you want to have lunch with, like, you know, you put something on your calendar. I used to put two lunch dates on my calendar, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I would intentionally just invite another person to lunch just to reconnect, stay in touch with them. You know, I'm even better at this now because I see the power in this, but like, you know, sending note cards, sending random surprise into like gifts, supporting their cause, right? Like when you see, like, if you connect, this is what I love about social media. So if you connect with these centers of influence, you kind of always keep up with them a little bit on Facebook, right? Because you can kind of always see what they're doing, right? And pay attention to them. So that way, when you meet them in person, you're like, oh, hey, I saw this. I saw you doing this with your kid. Or I saw you, you're doing the start of this new business. And anytime that you can add value to a person's life, that has nothing to do with what you do, right? Like I was always trying to add value to a person's life and had nothing to do with roofing. No, nothing, absolutely nothing. I just wanted to be help, right? Help first mentality. And so the more intentional that you can be, the more systematized that you can be around that, you can. But a lot of these CRMs, you know, it's all about customers. You know, they don't really think about like, oh, you need like a small little separate CRM or even an Excel sheet. And now with AI, you could probably build all kinds of tools with Manus and Claude and do all kinds of fun stuff to create your own little database that sends out reminders and texts and automated this and, you know, cool stuff that basically tells you, hey, write a handwritten note to John today.
What percentage of your business, curious, did that come, like, did that, how, what percentage of your customers came from that list of people that referred?
So for the centers of influence, I'd say probably like maybe 15 to 20%, but referrals overall and previous customers, things that I didn't have to spend ad dollars on was probably like 55 to 65%.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So you had that built over time, that compounds over time.
It's still compounding. Even I'm not the owner anymore. They're still getting benefit of that because, you know, the biggest flex is doing a good job on the roof and making sure the roof never leaks and they have a smooth and easy experience. That is the biggest flex. Okay. But then it's easy to forget, right? About that experience. Cause it's a one day, you know, most of these jobs are one day jobs, right? And if you go back 10 years, man, like if you don't stay in touch from these people, they can't remember, but that's where the vehicles in the neighborhood, the yard signs, they can't ever stop forgetting because like, it just, they constantly are seeing it. Even after their roof is long done, they still see you. And then they remember you kind of like the, have you heard of the thing where if you go out and buy a, like a, I don't know, I'm gonna make up like a red truck. You buy like a cyber truck, and all of a sudden now, like that's all you see are cyber trucks everywhere, right? Or like whatever the case may be. Like maybe you have to go buy a red minivan, and you never even thought you were gonna have to. And you had triplets, and now all of a sudden you gotta buy a red minivan. Now all you see are red minivans everywhere. it's the same thing. Once you buy a roof on Big Fish, you can never unsee Big Fish ever again, because he's going to be in your social media feed. He's going to be in trucks around the neighborhood. I mean, I still got people that send me messages and say, "Hey, I see your truck today. I saw your van today." And I'm like, "Oh, cool!" Like it's awesome. I mean, I think it's cool. Especially, I don't even own the company anymore.
A lot of contractors are rushing into AI, but really, a lot of them don't even know how to use a CRM yet. Why do you think that's a problem?
I don't know if it's necessarily a problem. I just think it's distracting them. It's like a focus problem. They have a focus problem. I think that actually, believe it or not, I'm learning that AI, if they're interested in AI, and that's what they're interested in, they're going to play with AI more than they're going to play with their CRM. Well, then they should teach AI how to use their CRM better. Because we're working on some stuff now that's like really cool, especially with Claude and Manus. And then connecting it with Telegram, you know, being able to create, like, even with Job Nimbus, like, you can, there's an open API. If you're literally asking for anything, it'll pull everything out of your Job Nimbus and just give you like better reporting than Job Nimbus can. It'll give you actual data that actually matters and that you can use. You basically just have to talk to it, right? And so if they're interested, I wish people were interested in learning how to use their CRM better than they were with AI. But if they're going to learn how to use AI, they might as well learn how to use it to manipulate their CRM better.
We'll talk about that. What are some of the things that you created like recently, or some of your clients that you work with created? That's cool.
Yeah. So I take it so far. Like, I get the ideas rolling and I did this, but my tech skills do not allow me to like finish to make it usable. Now, some of the entrepreneurs that I'm working with are very tech savvy. They're younger. These are guys that are in their early 30s, but I'm working with a company here in Port St. Lucie, Florida right now that we just built. He actually built it, because he's like, I showed him how to use Claude one day, and the next thing you know, he knows how to use Claude better than 99% of people. And so he was able to take that and Manus, I think, and being able to create, and then use Telegram to actually talk to it whenever he wanted to. And he's able to just like, we were able to pull a sales guy's report right now and say, "Hey, just give me this information about a sales guy and all of these different numbers that he wanted." Basically, if you can think it and create it in his head, it'll give it back to you, basically pulling the numbers off your CRM. We also created, he does metal roofing. And one of the hardest things in metal roofing, especially when you have new people on your team, is trying to train them all the little bits and pieces and how to order it and how to be efficient and how to like get the most out of your metal so you're not wasting stuff. And so we were able to create like basically an app. This is wild. We were able to create an app in like 3 hours on uploading an Eagle View, right? Getting a takeoff, right? Getting the cut sheets for all the metal sheets, all the metal panels, reducing the waste, making sure every piece was used, spitting out like the cut sheets. I mean, it was wild. I mean, what you're able to do now to enhance what the CRMs don't have, because again, not too many people love their CRM. There's always we always focus on the things we don't like about our CRM, but now AI fills in all the gaps for that, because there's nothing that as long as your CRM has some type of open source to where you can like link it with the API code, this AI like will literally find it and get all the data and do whatever you want with it.
Like, how much time did that save? Like, before, like you're basically creating like a proposal with metal roofing. Like, that was
do that too.
So I'm curious. So how much time was that saved with that whole workflow that they created?
Well, I would say, you know, before that stuff would take, you know, if you're really good and savvy, that would take a half hour to like do a takeoff, you know what I mean? And like get it really right. That's if you're savvy with it. But like, if you're green and you don't really understand it all and you haven't been doing it for 20 years or 10 years, I mean, that shit could take you 3 hours. What happens is they don't even use 3 hours it's not even the 3 hours. They just don't do it right. And so it's not even right. It's not even about the time. It's like, oh, dude, this is right. And now we can make sure that, because when we order the materials the right way and we make sure that we have enough material and we know how the crew knows exactly what they're putting on, and we're, you know, this company custom makes their own drip edge and all their own accessories and stuff like that, we can just be more efficient, right, with our time and then not make mistakes. Because when you make a mistake in metal roofing and you don't have enough, like, it really stops things. You got to go back and try to get, you know, new coil, more metal. We're hoping that it's the same color or the same, you know, same batch. You know, it can, you know, being short a couple of little pieces could be like catastrophic. It costs you thousands and thousands of dollars. And so like, this is going to obviously, you know, there's still going to be issues, right? But like, it's going to it's going to minimize the issues because now there is something that can just do things more faster. You know, I call it like a, it's like the metal calculator. We built like a metal app math calculator that is just like, if I showed this to like the old guys that are at the sheet metal union, they would just be like, holy, like they would just be like, they would be blown away. They'd be like, wow, I've been doing this by hand for like the last, you know, 40 years. And even with a computer and even with CAD, like it still takes me a long time. Well, now we can just upload all this stuff and the machines are really good. And you just got to learn how to like sync it up a little bit. If you don't know how to do that, you could probably find somebody that can know how to do it. As long as you tell them what your problems are, they know how to, they, you know, there's tech guys and then there's the roofing people. You just need to find a tech guy that can help you build out what you want to build. Because it's almost all possible now. I mean, there's not much that's not possible. I love the payments thing. Like even like presenting payment now, you know, with, I don't know if you know how this works, but when we partner up with like different lenders, they all have different fees, right? Like that are behind the scenes that like, actually charge us like dealer fees. Well, it creates a interesting like problem, like for most contractors, they can't figure out what plans to pick and stuff like that. Well, now you can build it to where like it bakes the fee in the end and all you got to do is see the payment buttons. And so you just click the payments and then you don't even have to worry about like understanding like what the dealer fees and stuff because everything's already baked in. Like when they say like, you know, you want to put a payment out there, it's like, boom, you can just show up on a screen and three buttons and which one do you want to pick? And like, you don't have to think about it. And it just goes faster because what happens is when there's hesitation or anxiety or a friction in the process, it slows customers down. It slows salespeople down. And we just want people to make better decisions and faster decisions, both on the homeowner side and on the contractor side.
Yeah, the big value there with AI is that you're saving time and you're increasing productivity and you can create more work with less people. Basically, that's what it comes down to. That's one of the big advantages you have.
Well, and I would say when you say less people, sure, but I would say why not take those people and just redeploy them and have them do more centers of influence networking, have them do the things AI can do, create connection, right? Like, and so I'd rather have the calculators do the calculating stuff, and I'd rather have more people go out and do the networking stuff because AI is not going to do that for you. Okay, so there's things that AI can't do. That if you learn how to leverage certain things, you know, I see a day when there's more people connecting, right? There's more people in our business develop part of the business. Yeah, there might be less people in our production department and our accounting department and maybe even our marketing, digital marketing type of stuff, but there's going to be more people doing people things. You know, let's let the people do people things, right? Because that's what people are good at, right? Me and you are connecting right now in person. Sure, you can make an AI podcast with all of this information, maybe, and people are going to be like, "Yeah, you know, it's a little bit vanilla, right? Like it doesn't like, you know, we don't trust it because they don't have real life experience. Where I have real life experience, you have real life experience, and we're collaborating. That's human connection. That's always going to be relevant. That's actually going to become a commodity in the future, the more the AI and tech goes up, because what I find is people are starting to isolate a little bit more. And they're hiding behind this tech because it feels safe and comfortable. And eventually, I think people are going to be in rude awakening because I think they're going to crave connection so bad that connection is going to be at such a premium that people are going to wish they started building community now, building connection now. And so that's why I'm excited about just using AI responsibly and not just becoming a data nerd that just sits behind a computer all day.
And this is a big reason why people are connecting with personal brands more today than they were before, because people can see the face. It's not really just a machine like before. And that's a big reason why people connect with personal. And you've done a great job, you know, building a personal brand over the last few years. Last time
15 years. I've been building. We all have a personal brand. So it's one of the, everyone has a personal brand. Personal brand is basically just you and your activity. I think that obviously, you know, if you want your personal brand to grow, you just need more attention, more eyeballs, right? And the way that you do that, there's lots of different distribution methods, but everyone has a personal brand. They just don't know it. Once you're aware that you have a personal brand, then you can be more, more precise in how you go about it, right? Have a better vision, right? And then basically you know what to say no to, you know what to say yes to. It's less confusing. It's niche, right? You want to be very niche. The more niche you can be, the better. And it's, you know, the same principles in business as in personal brand. But yeah, that human connection is just, you know, I used to have my face everywhere for my company. And then I realized, well, if I do that, I'm going to be having to take every single order and I'm going to have to sell every single job and I'm going to be solve every single problem. And then I took my face off the company and I just literally put the fish logo up. And that took like 3 years to kind of convert Benny's face to like the fish logo. And that was cool because I had a bigger vision for my life that I wanted to just be disconnected. I didn't want to be attached to my company all the time, right? I wanted to have a company, have its own life. And then I want to have me have my own separate kind of thing going on. So
how did you build a business that didn't depend on you?
Whew, I don't think we have enough time for that. here. So I will say I learned a lot about myself, what I was strong at, what I was weak at. I had a lot of good, I invested in a lot of mentors. So I invested in a lot of coaching. I invested in a lot of communities. I read a lot of books. I probably read over 100 books from 2019 to 2023 when I was really going through this transformation phase of my life. I implemented an operating system in my business that was really life-changing. For me, I read a book called Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman. And that talked to me about the visionary integrator, the entrepreneurial operating system. Got really excited about that. And then at the same time, I was learning how to train salespeople so that way they could replicate what I was doing. And that took a lot of energy because it was really hard for me to learn process and then teach process because I wasn't a process guy. I was just a personality that could sell, but I didn't know how to train that in somebody else. You know, you either had it or you didn't. And that wasn't scalable, right? And so doing sales and then an operating system for your business, for me, was the secret sauce. And then to then improve and then on the marketing strategy, because then I had more time to think about marketing strategy rather than just kind of wing it, because I winged it for a long time with marketing. Now I did better than most because most people weren't even thinking about marketing, but I was still winging it. Now I'm a lot more precise, a lot more strategy. It's almost like I have my own operating system for marketing, my own operating system for sales, for production, for accounting, and then an overall operating system for a company. You put the right people in the right seats, you delegate to the right people, and then you just find out what you want to do and you go do that and you put people in what they want to do and what they're great at, and you put them in the race in the right places and everybody wins. And that's how you do it. And it's been fun, you know. And I might only own 20% of my company now, but I have zero involvement, zero like anything. I get a financial report once a month and someone else is growing that that's super passionate about roofing in Pittsburgh. And now I get to follow my passion, which is helping other visionary entrepreneurs create more clarity, freedom, you know, impact, you know, hopefully live with peace. You know, a lot of guys right now that have grown up in this hustle culture, you know, you're familiar with that living in Miami. That's where I feel like the hustle culture started. And I think guys are realizing that's not a sustainable life, right? Like it's not sustainable for the soul. It's not sustainable for your body. And yeah, you might make a lot of money. You might have a lot of stress. You might do a lot of stuff. And, you know, but it's like, how do you build maximum impact and peace at the same time, right? And be able to balance between the two of them. There's no equal balance, but you have to be able to weave in and weave out, know how long you're going to go, how hard you're going to go, for what reasons and why. But you also have to have the time to contemplate, to understand your vision and where you're going, so that way you're a little bit more efficient in how you get there.
That was a multi-year process, right, to get to that level. Oh, so it's not like
still,
overnight.
I'm still doing this. It's a practice. Because I'm keep practicing these different systems, tools, learning about myself. It's just constant practicing, constant learning, constant evolving. You're always optimizing, tweaking, connecting with other people. Like, you know, I still invest in the same stuff now that I did back then, just thinking about things differently, right? And just thinks about how, like, you know, how do I help the guy from, you know, that's just starting out to get to like $2 million in revenue. Like, how can I help him? What are some simple things? Like, how do I help a guy going from 2 million to 5 million? How do I help a guy go from 5 to 10? How do I help a guy go from 10 to 100? Whatever your vision is, there is a set of skills that you need to develop that you need to change, because most people hit a ceiling, right? We all hit a ceiling. And when we hit a ceiling, our company hits a ceiling, correct? Because, I mean, if we hit a ceiling, we're a part of our company. And so then our company hits a ceiling. And so we have to do something different, right? We can't just do the same thing over and over again for 25 years and call that, 25 years of experience. It's really 1 year of experience 25 times. not really good, a good solid 25 years of experience if you're doing the same thing over and over again. And so you have to figure out different skills. You know, one of the biggest skills that I learned was emotional intelligence. That's a huge skill to learn, especially for guys that, you know, especially in the trades, you know what I mean? It may sound like a little woo-woo, but man, when you're dealing with people, the only way that you're going to be able to do anything with maximum impact is you're going to need a lot of people to help you and to be able to get a lot of people to follow you, to get a lot of people to listen, to be excited about your vision. You know, you got to be able to exemplify, people are going to want to be around you, right? People are going to want to be, you know, excited to come to work for the right people too. Cause you know, you can be a dickhead and throw off dickhead vibes all the time. And guess what? You're just gonna have a bunch of dickheads running around and eventually you're gonna be like, dude, this sucks. And so, you know, you got to figure out who you want to be, who you want to become, and, just start living that life now, and it can instantly change your life.
And one thing that surprised me, I mean, I've been working with contractors for overnight, basically 10 years at this point. And you'd be surprised at how, really just in business in general, how much emotion plays a role in decision-making. Even though if you're looking at a business, you should be looking at more like an irrational approach, a logical approach, but it's really emotion that guides a lot of decision-making. Sometimes to the detriment.
It's 50-50. I believe you have to have 50-50, but most guys are 90-10.
And one of the best books I've read and I'll give it to you. I think it's a great book. It's Keith Cunningham's The Road to Less Stupid. I don't know if you heard about it.
It's one of the first books I ever read. I actually joined an organization called TAB, and my business coach gave, that was the first book I read.
And he has a lot of great quotes in the book. I've read that book multiple times, and obviously I've learned from it. And one of the quotes, he goes, when emotion goes up, intellect goes down. That's one of the things. So for me, like because I get emotional sometimes, it's impossible not to be emotional on business. I always wait 24 hours. Like I always wait 24 hours before I decide or respond. If I get something happens in my business, I get something, a client makes me angry, whatever. I usually wait 24 hours before I make a response because I have to like let the emotions cool down before like I respond. Right. That's like kind of the thing that I took away from that book. But it's also the book, it's about staying rich. It's that the less dumb decisions you make, the more chances of you increasing your success with business. That's what it is. Just stop making dumb decisions.
Well, and it's like the A from under the world compound interest. If you have good compound decisions, you start to like really see the fruits of that. Right. And, you know, I was in a bad place for many years, you know, my 20s. Even my 30s, like I made a lot of dumb decisions. You know, I've overcome a lot of adversity. You know, God has smacked me upside the head on some things that I've had to overcome. And so, you know, call it lucky. I'm lucky to be alive, first of all. I feel like the only reason I'm here is because of God's grace. If it wasn't for that, I'd be dead and wouldn't even be having a conversation right now. I probably wouldn't have changed the man that I'm becoming. And so every day I live, you know, like it's, you know, it could be my last, and I always want to make the best of it. And what I don't want to happen is I don't want somebody else to have to go through what I've had to go through to like learn that, because it's very painful. And so I try to lead from a place of love and authenticity, to try to hope, instill and inspire people to become who they were meant to be, you know, because I don't think most humans walking around right now know who they were meant to be, because I think they get beat up by the world. They get beat up, you know, they grow up and their parents have a lot of influence on them. Their friends and their family are telling them everybody what to do. And it's kind of like, you're trying to be your own person, but like, you know, a lot of times we just succumb to the environment that we're in. It's not even our fault necessarily, but it is our responsibility to change. If we want a better life, if we want to become somebody different, that is possible. Right. And so you have to like create a vision for that, but you have to slow down and stop to be able to reset and say, all right, who do I really want to become? Like, who am I? What did God create me for? Not what did my parents think I should be? What do my friends think I should be? What did the college professor or the sports coach tell me I should be? Because if we look back on our life, there's a lot of binary choices and things that have happened to us that kind of led us to exactly to this point, right where we're here today. And you might not have been aware of it, but now that you are aware of it, you have a choice now. You can affect your future. Like, you can literally completely transform your future by becoming more aware. And that path is an interesting path. It's one that I love talking about. You know, it's the inner journey, not necessarily the external journey, because I feel like you have to go inside to really to really flourish and to blossom. But when contractors and when entrepreneurs are ready for that, I mean, that's the stuff I really love to talk about.
Yeah, and when you start a business, it's a journey, right? Especially entrepreneurs. In my life, I've connected the best with entrepreneurs. That's the people that I connect the most with and the best with. If you talk to regular employees, I mean, they're normal people, nice people. But typically, when I talk to entrepreneurs, I connect with them because they want to grow, they want to learn, they want to get better. And you know, a lot of regular people are just not like that, right? They're not wired that way. So, and that's a journey, right? So, I think a lot of owners, business owners, if they want to learn and want to grow, that's the only way to grow. There's no way to actually grow a business by actually have to learning the skills, to understanding what you're doing. Because if not, then you're never going to grow your business. And a lot of people get stuck. I'd say the majority of, Benny, what's your experience? The majority of people just are, you know, between 1 million or less than that or 5 million. They never get past, you know, 10 years. They'll never get past that, right? They're just because they refuse to take action to actually learn or whatever.
Well, they have to change. I mean, it's all about you. If you don't change, your business isn't going to change. Your life isn't going to change. You know, you have to change if you want change to happen. And it's not actually, you know, what's interesting? I can teach you all the tactics in the world. I can teach you all the stuff about sales. I can teach you all the stuff about EOS. I can teach you all the stuff about marketing, accounting, everything that I could that I can teach you. It's already all out there on YouTube. Like you can go listen to it right now. Like not even my stuff. You can just go, like anybody's got all the tactics are all out there. But until you, the person, the man or the woman behind the entrepreneur actually makes a difference in their life and makes changes and decides what's important, nothing's going to change. So you're just going to be a bigger, faster version of, you know, I guess the normie or the regular person out there. Now, the reason that there's 10% of the people in the population are driven, okay? And so you probably just have you want to be around other driven human beings, right? Well, there's a gene defect. There's a book called Driven by Dr. Doug Brackman that I think it'll open your eyes to this. And I think this is why we're attracted to each other, because we understand the blessings that come with being driven. We also understand the curses that kind of come with driven, right? And so when we can be around our people, we feel connection, right? Like, cause we kind of get each other, right? And that feels good. We don't know what it's like not to have that gene defect in our brain. You know, it's something that you were born with. You can't help it, right? Like it's nothing that you can do to help that. But once you understand how to access it, you can start to minimize the damage that you do to yourself and then really just focus on the good sides of that defect. Cause that defect is the ADHD, you know, you can call it what you want, but there's a lot of good things that that we can do. And then we can help other people. We can help the normal people that don't have that gene because they need purpose too, right? And if we create enough purpose, you know, hopefully they'll find something attractive about what we're doing and they're going to come help us, right? Because it's a team effort. We can't do it without them. They can't do it without us. And we're not better or worse than them. It's just using our skill sets, using our superpowers, kind of like the Avengers to put a good team together.
Why do you think so many owners chase growth that doesn't actually align with the life they want?
Because they think that if they just get to the next step or make another dollar, that they're going to be happier. And happiness comes from the inside, you know, and it's probably easy, you know, it's probably weird for me to say that. And people are listening and probably, oh, it's easy for him to say that. You just have this like great life. Well, I also could tell you a story about the terrible life that I had too. You didn't ask me those questions yet. Maybe we'll have time to do another podcast about that. But I mean, because we're always chasing, we can't chase. It's chasing. It's chasing. How do we go within and how do we just be happy with ourselves and who we are? Not chasing. You know, I used to want to be like Grant Cardone. I'll never forget when I fell in love with that guy because I was in the car sales business back in 2000, 2001. I remember going to a Grant Cardone seminar before anybody even knew who he was. This was 26 years ago. Okay. And I was like, man, look at that guy. Good looking dude, Rolex, like just talks great, like commands a room. I'm back in the back buying his tapes. Like that was back when tapes and CDs were like a thing. And then when Facebook came out, I was watching him and I'm like, oh yeah, 10X. I'm going to be like, yeah, but that wasn't who I wanted to be. I don't want to work that. I don't want to work like that. I don't want to be like, I don't know. That's not me. Even Gary Vee, I love Gary Vee, but like, I don't want to be like Gary Vee. I tried to do some of that stuff. And every time I would just fall flat on my face when I tried to copy other people or when I tried to like borrow other people's stuff. It wasn't until I started becoming Benny that that I felt freedom in my life. Like I just felt like, oh, it's like there's no other pressure to like, you know, keep up with the Joneses. I remember like when I bought my first Rolex, this is a great story. in 2017, I bought my first Rolex just because I could, right? Because, like, you know, I grew up poor. Like, I never thought in a million years I'd ever have a Rolex. I was like, I was in the Bahamas one day. I passed the Rolex store. I looked down. It was like $12,000 for a Rolex. I'm like, I'll take it. And I would wear it, and I would flash it. I'd take pictures with it. I was, like, so proud of it. And then in, like, 2021, my brother got murdered. And I just realized none of that shit matters. Like, none of this stuff, like, matters. I used to care about, like, all the clothes that I would wear, and, cars and houses. Like, I just, none of that stuff matters. It may matter, and they're nice to have, and I'm not saying anything wrong with it, but, like, I just remember, like, that was somebody else's vision. That wasn't Benny's vision. And now I feel a lot freer, right? Do I still like nice things? Absolutely. But it's just, it goes to show you that you can change and become who you are. And there's nothing wrong. Listen, if you genuinely love watches, you genuinely love wearing a Rolex, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, I feel like you're going to create a lot of pain in your life, you know? And that's just one example that I have. I have 100 of those examples, but that's one stuck out to me. I wear a Whoop now.
I wear an Apple one, so yeah. Yeah. I want to get to this topic, because I thank you for sharing. That's a great info about like hiring in-house versus hiring a marketing manager. Cause I think it's one of the things that I talk to our clients about. It's a lot of confusing, information about, but I think, when is the best hire in terms of hiring a marketing manager? When should a contractor think about hiring a full-time marketing manager?
It really depends on their vision. You know, it really does. It depends on their vision. It depends on their bankroll. It depends on how much they want to invest in their company for future growth, right? Like, there's a lot of, you know, I hate to say it's one size fits all, but for a lot of contractors, you know, you really are in survival mode till at least $3 million, you know, in revenue. Because you're still doing most of the stuff in your business. You're a high paid employee in your business. You know, you're the one that making most of it happen. You know, if you're good with your money and you know how to sock it away, and you know, and you want to invest in your company. See, a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't really want to invest in their company because they started their companies with scratch and nothing. And so, like, they just take from their company. They just, you know, they go out and buy the houses and the cars and the watches and all this stuff. And they don't realize that, man, if they really want to build something that's going to withstand the test of time and they want to build a system, well, one of those systems happens to be demand generation, right? Like, how are we going to get, you know, marketing, right? You know, and eventually, like, if I don't want to be always the one doing it, I definitely got to find a who, right? There's another book called Who Not How. Like, I don't want to have to know how to do all that stuff. So I want to find a who that knows how to do some of that stuff, right? Well, you know, you're not going to be able to go out and find, you know, is it going to be responsible for you to pay $200,000 a year for, like, some sophisticated marketing person to come in at your small little company? Probably not. Right. And so you got to build yourself, like, a little plan of, like, what things can I have someone do? Right. And so maybe at first you have your agency that does a lot of your heavy lifting, a lot of your task work, you know, a lot of your digital ditch digging, if you will. And you have a marketing manager that's maybe doing that's helping manage the agency, understanding marketing, starting to learn from a high level, managing the budget. The spend of marketing is really important for a marketing manager to be able to help you with that, making sure that we're allocating the dollars. But then also, like, that local brand awareness that I was talking about, the relationship stuff, like, right, like, find somebody, you know, early on that can help you with events and trade shows and, you know, making sure that the shirts get done and the posters get done. And, you know, if we're going to run an ad in a local stuff, it just basically just compiling everything and just executing on all that stuff, because you as the owner, that's what you suck at the most, is like executing all the things there, all the ideas in your head. So basically you just need somebody at first that can really just take your ideas and execute on the most important ones. Right. And, you know, you want somebody that has a strong acumen for marketing, but, you know, if you can only afford someone for 50, 60, 70, 80 grand a year, you know, don't expect them to be like, you know,
basically,
yeah. Don't expect them to be Alex Ramosi in the marketing department. Yeah, yeah. Don't expect them to be Gary Vee in the marketing department, like, or even Mauricio Cardinal in the marketing department. Like, it's just not going to happen. But, and then as you grow, you can kind of just, it's a team of people, right? I love specialists, right? Like, have a marketing manager that knows how to delegate and then hire specialists to do the specialist things, right? Like, because, you know, some people are going to hire a marketing manager, want them to do all the events and then do the video work and then the editing work and then manage the agency. And, like, you know, like, you got to be reasonable. So, you know, but I'd say that, you know, I here for me, the answer was, like, I think it's $4.5 million in revenue. I I hired an executive assistant. I had the executive assistant work for me on all things I was doing in my business for a year, because marketing was one of the biggest tasks I still had left on my plate. She learned that. And then I said, hey, you can either go be the marketing manager or you can stay being my executive assistant. We'll hire a marketing manager. And she decided to be the marketing manager. And then I went out and hired another executive assistant. You know, but I'm a little nervous in marketing. I really loved it. So I feel like I had a little head start with that. But the best thing to do is probably reach out to someone like you or me and like say, hey, like how about, like help me with like a little bit of a game plan. You know, like the, if you don't know how to hire salespeople and production people, you definitely aren't going to know how to hire a marketing manager. Exactly. You know what I mean? So like most of you guys, most people listening right now don't even know how to hire people, period. Like, let alone a marketing manager. And so I think you got to get that skill down. You got to really take recruiting, interviewing, hiring. That's a whole nother skill set that you need to learn. You know what I mean? You need to understand people behavior. So when I say right people, right seats, that might sound like a cool little slogan, but you need to know how people are wired. You know how to, you know, like you don't want to hire an accountant for a sales position. You don't want to hire a salesperson for an accounting position. But some people just come in because you posted a job and they need a job. Guess what? They need a job. Their wife or husband told them, hey, you need a job. Oh, look, it's right down the street. Oh, just go tell them whatever they need to tell them to get the job. Well, a lot of you suckers that are listening, you'll take the first thing you have because like you don't want to deal with it no more and you just want your pain to go away. And if somebody tells you that they can do something, you're like, okay. And then you wonder why shit doesn't work out.
Yeah. Well, you in that answer, if you guys listen closely, he took the ideas he had himself before and he trained the person before you hired them. So you already knew what the person is going to look like before you made the hire. And that's really the key thing. I think where a lot of contractors miss that is actually they know the strategy beforehand. Before they actually make the hire, and then they can delegate that. I had Al Levy in the podcast. I don't know if you know Al Levy on the podcast a few months ago, and one of the things he mentions is that there's seven things you have to manage in your home service business. In the beginning, you're going to be wearing seven different hats, and one of the hats you cannot delegate is actually being a marketing manager. In the beginning, you cannot delegate that because you have to learn that yourself. And once you learn it, then you can delegate it. And that comes with time. So you said it at 4 million, that means you've been in business maybe a couple years or a few years, and you've already built out the equity and you learned. And that's the thing. That's the thing that most contractors do not do is learn. Is actually learn how it works before you make the hire. Because if you make a hire without actually knowing how it understands, you have no measure. You're not going to understand how it works and you're not going to know if they're doing a good job or not.
Yeah, it's one of the most high value things that you can learn in your business is learning people, understanding how people work, understanding personality assessments, behavior assessments, how to interview people. Because if you can save time, if you're going to spend a lot of time on learning it, I put 50 hours of research into all of that, right? Read as many books as you can. Get as much advice from other people as you can. Study human behavior. Start testing stuff out on you and your small team. Then put yourself a process together. And because you do all of that, you know, we always say hire slow, fire fast, is because there's a process like that you're going to feel it's a little bit painful if you're not used to like, you know, slowing down to speed up. But if you do that, you'll make a lot less mistakes and you'll have a lot less regrets because you're getting it right on the front side. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad example. I'm going to put it out there. It's kind of like if you're in your 30s or 40s and you've had, you know, 20 girlfriends over your life, right? Hopefully you're starting to get better finally at picking the right girl. Imagine if you had all that information back when you were 22, you know, you would actually go out and like, hey, I know exactly what I want. I know exactly who I am. So it's always about values fit first, right? So values. Besides skill set, doesn't matter, right? Because if I have the values right, like, hey, you know, in personal relationship, hey, you know, like, how do we want to handle money? Where are we at in our spiritual life? You know, where do we care about fitness, right? Like, all the things that matter to you, like, should probably matter to your partner, right? But when we're young, too, we just wing it, dude. If she looks good, we date her, you know, like, yeah, yeah. And then we realize that, like, there's more to life than just that, right? And the same thing goes to hiring, right? It's no different. You just get a lot more practice in hiring if you do it enough times. And you meet enough people you always got to be recruiting. They say, oh, always be selling, right? Or so some of the marketers say, always be marketing. I say, always be recruiting. Because always be recruiting is just putting you in front of different humans, seeing what's out there, because sometimes we get trapped in our little bubble and we think that like, oh, just because we have a couple of people in our office, it's not that great. We just think everybody's not that great out there. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. So Benny, where do people find you?
BennyFisher.com.
BennyFisher.com. make sure to listen. He has a great podcast also too, right? You have a podcast. Yeah. I saw you had Gary V on there.
I've had Gary V. I've had Tommy Mello. I've had Gino Wickman, the creator of EOS. I've had Cameron Harold, who took 1-800-GOT-JUNK from like zero or for like $2 million to $100 million. I've had a lot of cool people on my podcast, people that I should have no business being in the same room with. I always have to pinch myself when some of the people that I've had on my podcast. But yeah, that's been fun. It's called the Big Fish Garage Podcast. We don't really talk about business, which is very interesting. We talk about, we interview entrepreneurs who have been through it, but we don't really, we talk more about the things that they've overcome, the lessons and the adversity, the stories that they have. Very few episodes are actually about tactics and business. So if you want tactics, I think this is the show that you're doing, the AI marketing show. So
cool. Benny, pleasure speaking with you, man. It was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.